A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap. I also co-host the podcasts Breakfast All Day, Maximum Film, and occasionally Deck the Hallmark. And the Deck the Hallmark gentleman and I have a new book called...
Talk about the book.
Called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, out October 26th.
So I was so happy the other night. Wait, before I go into this
you
important story...
are Dave White... film critic for The Wrap, and we are espoused.
Yeah. Not just betrothed. That was a long time ago.
That's right. We're past that. Now we're espoused.
We're fully espoused. Saturday night, I was fixing to go to bed. Went out to the balcony to, you know, survey my kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Breathe in those Santa Anas.
No, not last night. Saturday night.
Oh, there were no winds on Saturday? Okay.
No.
All right.
The wind didn't pick up until yesterday.
Ah.
It was all over Los Angeles wind Twitter. Did you not notice?
I'm not keeping up, apparently.
Anytime there's a minute change in weather.
Yes.
Or if there is a 2.6 earthquake somewhere, mm-hmm. Los Angeles takes to Twitter and begins to emote.
Yes. OMG, 0.002 inches of rain.
So that wind is still kicking it up out there.
Mm-hmm.
This is like Winnie the Pooh grade blustery day.
It's Raymond Chandler weather out there.
I thank God these are some north-northwest, west-northwest or whatever the hell winds. They're coming up from the north, and that's why it is now cold.
Ah.
And that makes me happy. Cold for Los Angeles, disclaimer.
Sure, yes.
Because you know what I hate more than anything? When the Joan Didion winds begin to blow.
Oh, yeah.
When they're hot.
That's icky.
When the September, when the Santa Anas blow in September and it's hot,
yeah.
You want to die. Like, hot wind in your face is one of the worst, like...
It's not appealing.
I would rather walk around with a rock in my shoe all day than that. I would rather have, like, a paper cut on my tongue than that.
Fair enough.
It is... the nastiest moment of Los Angeles weather when the Santa Ana winds blow.
Yeah, that's about as
hot.
It is as unappealing as it gets, I'd say.
Because when they kicked up yesterday and they were cold, I was like, okay, all I have to do is close the windows.
Yeah.
And, you know, get cozy because it's, you know, it's going to be 49 degrees outside.
Put on a light hoodie.
Yeah. Well, not yet, but
okay. Yeah. We'll get there. Anyway, so Saturday night, you're surveying your kingdom.
I'm surveying my kingdom. And I look out to the mailboxes to see if there's any, like, stray packages left on top.
Mm-hmm.
Nine times out of ten, stray packages are for this apartment.
True.
And there were none. But there was a big old box sitting right outside our front door, which I can also see from that end of the balcony.
Right.
It said Hachette on the outside of it. I was like, ooh, Hachette. A major publishing house has sent us a big box. What could be inside it? 16 copies of your new book. The book that you... how do we say it? It's Brandon Gray, Daniel Pandolf, and Daniel Thompson.
Yes.
With... Alonzo Durante.
Yes, I'm the with.
That means you wrote it. They said all the things.
With you, Tallulah Bankhead then you, as...
Then you wrote it.
Black Widow.
So, it's here.
Yeah.
It's here. It's off the shipping lane.
It was stuck in a shipping container for, you know,
a long time.
Yeah, past our September original release date, but now it's coming out October 26th.
It's in the warehouse. It's going to drop on the 26th.
It is happening.
How excited are you?
I'm extremely excited.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one thing to just, when you hold it in your hand for the first time, that's great. But just knowing that it's actually...
We already had the advance copy here for a while.
They had sent me one a while ago. But to know that it's actually in the warehouse and ready to go, we're actually doing an online event on the 26th with a bookstore in New Jersey called Word. And it's not a religious bookstore, which you would think, because it's called Word Bookstore, but it's not. They mean the actual word.
Right.
A
word that just means word.
Exactly.
Not the word.
With a capital W, yes.
Right.
So that's going to be at 7:30 Eastern time on the 26th, and I'll post a link in the show notes. But I'm thrilled this is happening. And this year's countdown to Christmas starts on Friday, October 22nd. So we'll be hitting right as people are, you know, coming off of that first weekend for fans of the network and those movies.
I wanted all the neighbors to walk past our door and see the box, like, ooh, Hachette. An author must live in that apartment.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think I should begin treating those two with a little more respect.
Yes, I could really sense that was on everyone's mind as they passed by the box.
Yeah.
So that's happening. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too. Because you could wind up with royalties. This is
my, as Michelle Wolf would say,
my hope.
My first two books never quite crossed that finish line, but this
cash-based hope.
This one could do it.
Yeah, good. You never know.
Like, do me a favor, y'all. What I'm excited about is the prospect that this book isn't just going to be in, you know, what is left of the brick and mortar bookstores in this country. You know, indies and. You know, is Barnes & Noble like the last chain standing at this point?
I don't know.
I guess Books A Million. There's a handful of them. But, you know, if you see this at your local indie bookstore, if you see it at Target or Walmart or one of those places, please take a picture and, like, tweet it to us at LinoleumCast.
Right.
Because I want to see it in the wild. And this is the first time I've ever written a book that could...
We're not going into stores.
That might actually be carried by Target, which I'm very thrilled about.
We will not be in stores this holiday season, but, you know...
What if we... Okay.
What if you go to a store, listener?
What if we went into a Target on, like, a Thursday morning when they first open... And there's almost nobody in there. I'm not saying don't tell me your answer now. Think about it.
I'm still watching the Los Angeles Public Health Twitter numbers go down. They are going down, and I'm very happy about that.
Yes.
But I'm still watching.
I understand.
And waiting. Anticipating.
I mean, look, our thing with Target, even in the flushest of times, was go early when no one is there.
Well, yeah, of course.
So I think if we
people.
Exactly. I think if we continue that strategy, you know, we could maybe do it, and it would not be a horrifying experience.
Possibly.
We'll see. This is kind of a light movie week for us because nothing big wanted to open opposite No Time to Die.
And we did not see
No Time to Die. No Time to Die because we're not going into theaters yet.
They did not send a screening link for critics. They sent critics to... the cinema.
Yes.
To watch the film. That's not us. We didn't do that.
So we're talking about one indie film that is only in theaters right now, and then one that is in theaters but drops on Netflix tomorrow on October 13th.
Yeah, but when do we get to see Bond? When can I look at it on my couch?
I have no idea. I'm sure they're
Christmas.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, obviously this is their this is a big theatrical. It's 3D. It's IMAX. It's like there's all these
3D.
You can see it in 3D. Yeah.
No.
You don't have to, but you can.
No, all right. Okay.
So yeah, I have no idea when that's going to be screened. Look. No.
And it's like 3 hours.
It's like 2:45 or something.
Why?
2:50.
Why is that?
We're still a month away from finally getting to see Shang-Chi. So like,
why
you know,
is it 3 hours?
Because it's...
Honestly, I haven't begun thinking about this film until today. when you told me that it wasn't going to be screening for us, I just thought, oh, I can keep not thinking about it. But like...
I get it is 3 hours because it is the last of the Daniel Craig movies, and I guess they really wanted to give him a big
whoosh.
A big ta-ta.
A big beat it.
Fare thee well.
Does he die at the end?
007. Of course not.
Oh, okay.
You don't kill James Bond.
I guess not, because you still have to have the character James Bond be alive.
James Bond will be back.
If you're going to keep making the James Bond movies.
The delicatessen of fortitude.
They have been making James Bond movies since I was in my mother's womb.
Yeah. I mean, when Dr. No is what, 1960?
I don't know.
One or something?
When was Dr. No?
I think...
Was that the first one?
Yes.
We're real experts on 62, James Bond.
62. So we're going to 50 years.
So I was
this.
In diapers, but I was. Oh, no, it was before.
No, it was before you were born.
Yeah, it was 2 years before I was born.
Yeah.
So, like, there's never not. James Bond is like there's a Santa Claus.
He's
like,
been
there's
a constant in our lives.
Never not been a Santa Claus. There's never not been a James Bond.
Yeah.
Are they going to stop making James Bond movies, or are they just going to get a new one?
No, they just get it. They always get a new one. Because he's like, what, the sixth one or something? Connery, Lazenby, Moore, Dalton.
They need to make the next one be stop motion animation.
Of course. But we never get what we want. Yeah, he's the sixth. Good. He's the sixth official Bond. You know how this works.
Melissa McCarthy is the next James Bond.
Because
I saw a Spy.
If the Spy franchise just becomes the 007 franchise, I'd be fine with that.
I'll tell you a thing. Spy
but only if Paul Feig
is
comes
more
back
fun than any James Bond movie I've seen in years.
You liked Skyfall.
Sure. All I remember about Skyfall is
Adele
and Judi Dench.
Judi Dench is great in Skyfall.
And now she's not in them anymore.
No. Now Ralph Fiennes is M. But Paddington is Q, so, you know.
That's Ben Paddington Wishaw. That's not Paddington.
Okay.
That's a different thing entirely.
But if you close your eyes, he's Paddington.
Except no one in James Bond movies says, if we're kind and polite, would be right.
Q, one of his gadgets should be like, it's orange marmalade, but it's actually Gelignite, you know?
I guess... I just assumed eventually James Bond would stop.
No.
I don't know why I assumed that.
Not while they're making money, they're not.
I don't know why I assumed that, but I just figured eventually someday they would have someone just become too old and then be the end of Bond.
Okay, again, this has been happening your entire life. We have watched Bond shift from person to person like four times now. How are you not getting this?
My problem here is that I don't know what my problem here is.
I don't either.
My problem here is that I don't care.
Well, yeah, but
I care about James Bond less than I care about the Marvel Universe, and my relationship with the Marvel Universe is
tenuous at best.
Oh, look, here's a Marvel movie. I'm going to enjoy myself for 90 minutes,
and a half hours,
90 minutes to 5 hours, however long this film's going to be, and then I'm going to forget everything I saw and move along. And so I know that as a child watching them on television, on the ABC Saturday Night Movie, I kind of imprinted on Sean Connery in a way. And then when he stopped being it, I didn't have that same strong feeling about it anymore.
So you didn't have like a moment where like, ooh, I finally get to see the new one in the theater?
Well, when I was a child, yes.
Right.
When I was like 8 or 9,
mm-hmm.
I just breezily waltzed right into
Live and Let Die?
The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, okay.
And because I don't know how old I was.
You're like 10, I think.
I was, well, what year did that come out? 73, 74?
I think 74, but hang on. You were there for Lulu, though, right?
I didn't know who she was.
74.
Yeah, so I was like 9 or 10, depending on when it was released. And and no one told me I couldn't,
even though it was PG?
Even though they were naughty movies. Like,
well, see, that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
What should have been...
They were horny movies.
What should have been, by rights, my first Bond in the theater...
Yeah.
...is The Spy Who Loved Me.
Right.
Which is, everybody says, is the best of the Roger Moore movies.
Right.
My brother Fernando.
Ah, from Nando.
Told my parents.
Good. You needed some censorship in your
that
life.
That it was too horny for me, basically. So my first Bond in the theater.
They were so horny, I didn't even understand what people were doing.
Right.
Why.
I hear you. My first Bond in the theater was Moonraker.
Oh, nice.
Which is stupid.
Well, they're all stupid.
But
this is also stupid. As you get older, you also learn they're all totally racist too.
Oh yeah, no, they're colonizing.
You're
you know,
a child, and you're just thinking, okay, well, this is the world. And then as you become an adult, you're like, oh wait, this is the world of people who are terrible.
Yeah, this is British people who can't get over like not being the center of the universe anymore. And oh, and misogynist too. Great,
right?
What a bonus.
So eventually, this will stream and...
Yes.
Or, you know, maybe once we've been boosterized and we are, and the numbers go all the way down, if it's still in theaters, we could go on a Monday morning at like 10 a.m.
Yes.
That might work.
After we go to Target.
No, I'm not doing two places in one day.
Oh, heavens no.
No. No. I can only do one thing per day. I'm sorry. Have we been talking for 30 minutes without talking about films yet?
16.
Okay. Hey, everyone. Is this your first time listening to The Linoleum Knife?
This is the show.
We go on sometimes. Mm. All right. Mass. Mass is the name of a movie. It opened this past weekend.
Yes.
It is from the filmmaker whose name is Fran Kranz.
Yes.
He is also an actor. And was in a bunch of stuff when he was young. He was one of those hot young dudes, you know, with like the bod. You know what I mean?
The only thing I even remember seeing him in is Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
And I barely remember him in that.
And he got smart because he was like, oh, dang, I'm going to be 40.
I have a shelf life.
I'm not a hot young dude anymore. I'm like a hot middle-aged person now.
Yeah.
But... I'm just speculating. I've never met this person
of course,
in my life.
Yes, this is but sheer invention.
In my head, I'm thinking, all right, where's my career going? If I'm a hot young guy in Hollywood and I'm bopping around from movie to movie, but I'm not a household name.
Right.
I'm just someone that people look at and go, oh, look, he's a hot young guy. And then I get older and I think, wait a second. I'm going to wind up in a Hallmark movie if I'm not careful. I got to get something going. You start writing and directing. Which is what he has done.
Not that talented people don't make Hallmark movies.
Sure.
But yes, it can be a trap if you're not careful.
This is a little teeny tiny movie, meaning that it's set in one building, primarily in one room.
Yes.
It stars Jason Isaacs and Martha Plimpton. And Ann Dowd and Reed Burney. They are two sets of parents who are meeting in an Episcopalian church
basement, meeting room
with a little kitchenette off to the after the side. And they are doing this because 5-6 years in the past, the son of Ann Dowd and Reed Burney walked into his high school and became a mass shooter. He shot and killed many students.
One of whom was the son of
Jason Isaacs and Martha Plimpton. So the bulk of the film, there's a little bit of intro and a little bit of ending stuff. But the bulk of the film is these four people sitting in a room, working it out. Like the parents of the killer and the parents of the killed. Remind me, does the son who... That's right. No, yes. The son who was the mass shooter died that same day.
I believe so, yes.
Yes.
I reviewed this out of Sundance, so I don't remember all the details.
I watched it last week.
Okay.
And I'm correct on this. He was killed that day. I can't remember if he was shot or if he killed himself. But anyway, this is not a true story. It is fictional. Fran Kranz wrote the script and directed it. And it is a lot to deal with.
It is more than it knows how to be, I think.
I agree with you on that. There are four solid... Well, there are 3.5 solid performances going on.
I think they're all four are good.
I think Jason Isaacs could have turned it down from 11 to 9.
It didn't bother me. I also like, by the way, there is the short intro is sort of not particularly relevant per se, but Rita Wool I think is very funny as this church employee who's sort of sweating the details that are kind of ridiculous,
right.
And it's a bit of a breather before the movie goes to Heavy Town.
But it is 98% heavy.
Yeah.
And, you know, discussions of forgiveness and what makes this happen.
Yes.
You know, are there reasons?
Tragedies?
Can parents intervene in any substantive way? The subject of gun control comes up for 20 seconds. But it is largely a film about emotions.
Right.
And, you know, all of the things other than, you know, strict gun laws.
Yeah.
Which annoyed me, honestly. I would like a little more polemic about gun laws,
I think in a film like this. If this were about parents confronting, like, a congressman, yes.
You're right.
I think with each other, there's, what are you going to say?
Right. You are correct about that. I hadn't thought that all the way through.
Okay.
This is about feelings.
Yeah.
And they hit all the notes you think they're going to hit. They say all the things you think they're going to say. It is occasionally moving. It is not... the cathartic experience for me that I've seen other people having?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think that the film does offer a catharsis, and I think that's part of what it does wrong.
Mm.
Because I think the film is taking on such a big, messy, complicated topic about big, messy, difficult to process feelings and wraps them up.
Because it ultimately winds up being a film about mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And wraps everything up a little tidy for one afternoon, one meeting.
I would say not a little tidy. It's a lot.
A lot. Tidy. Okay, you're right. A lot tidy.
There's a lot of heavy-handed stuff that goes on that is meant to underline points that people are making.
Yeah.
And a symbolic setting.
The title.
Symbolic gestures. The title of the film. Not necessary. Again, take it from 11 to 9, or 7, or even 6. And my snotty indie film art house personal likes and dislikes will be more satisfied.
Right. My thing is like either unleash the difficult stuff and let it be difficult and sit with the difficulty.
Yeah.
Or like put us further along in the arc of this conversation and these feelings and this processing, because this is about people processing still.
Yes.
Tragedy and grief and personal loss, and then give me the catharsis.
Right.
But you can't open that box and close it in the course of this 90 minutes. It's more than this movie, I think, can take on.
Yeah.
But along the way, I like the four performances.
Yeah.
There are, I said,
Martha Plimpton particularly.
Yes, I agree. She's the MVP here.
Ann Dowd obviously is also great.
Reed Birney is one of those guys who is that guy. Like you may not know his name, but you'll see him be like, oh yes, him.
You've seen him in stuff and you think, oh, you're always playing like the mean executive man.
Right. Yeah. Or the congressman.
Or the congressman. Yeah.
In fact, I think he was the VP. I think he was Kevin Spacey's VP on House of Cards.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, in my review of The Wrap, I said that there are speeches in this movie that will become like that you will see in those collections of best monologues for auditioning actors. Or
yeah.
Like there is some good sort of self-contained moments of
all
writing.
All-state drama competitions and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yeah. But as a whole, it doesn't all work. I also really want to shout out the sound design team.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a very specific kind of hum and echo in these sort of like church basement-y meeting rooms.
Oh, there are.
That this movie I've been in plenty of them. Really captures well. And I admire that element of the craft, because this is essentially a film to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is some camera stuff, and sometimes the camera stuff becomes too sort of self-aware. Like there are some slow pans and some slow zoom ins, but then like Jason Isaacs gets mad about something and suddenly it's all shaky cam and mm-hmm. like, you know, handheld docu whatever. And you're like, whoa, yeah. Okay, movie. Let's one or the other. You
pick something.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a kind of dialogue that sounds like dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It does not sound like organic human speech. It sounds like dialogue. And you can always tell that that's taking place when no one in a group of people speaking in a film are pausing, because that's how people speak.
Right.
People speak falteringly. And when they don't, it feels like it might be a prepared, written down thing.
Yeah.
And I understand needing to economize your screen time. But if you say less, and the person speaking sounds like they're really speaking, almost extemporaneously, that suits me more. I'm thinking particularly about that film from last year or the year before, Life and Nothing More. Is that what it called? That what it was called?
Remind me.
Life and Nothing Else. Life and Nothing More.
Life and Nothing But.
Life and Nothing But. Hang on.
Life and Nothing More. Right. Yes. That was a Spirit
Antonio
Awards.
Antonio Mendez Esparza's film.
Yes. It was a Spirit Awards contender like several years ago and then finally got released like in the last year or two.
It's really good.
Yes. Very much so.
And what stays with me about that film is the absolute naturalism mm-hmm. of the way people spoke with each other. It was a script, but it felt more loose and human.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's just a prejudice that I have, and I want that. If I'm not watching a big studio effort where a lot of money's riding on the line, and you know, it's about a talking, you know, Easter bunny.
You prefer a more improvisational film.
I don't even prefer improvisation. I just prefer...
No, improvisational.
Speech that sounds like it's coming from a human being who's thinking on their feet.
Right.
Yeah. That's my complaint. But serious subject matter, you know, an earnest attempt to explore ideas about grief and blame. And so points for that. This is not a bad film.
No, it's...
I'm just griping about the parts that I don't like because I find it... always, I find it more disappointing.
Well,
when a film like this won't...
You're tougher on a film that is making more of an effort.
Yeah.
This one is.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. Maybe better than fine.
Yeah. I hope I would. I'll be curious to see what Mr. Kranz's second film is like.
Yeah.
And if he feels more, I don't know, liberated in terms of like structure, like, you know, having something that feels less theatrical, less stagey, less stage bound than this film can sometimes. But, you know, I'm all for people making complicated dramas about messy human emotions and adults, you know.
Right. So, you know, good first film.
Promising first film.
I say good. Right. I say good. Fine to good.
I had to give it a number on, you know, when I reviewed it for Metacritic, and I gave
Who cares?
Well,
who cares about the Metacritic number?
I'm making a point here.
Oh, I make your point.
Because I guess the numbers are generally meaningless and I don't care. I gave it a 5 because just because like I was right down the middle with it. I think there's a lot that works, but there's a lot that doesn't. And so it's, you know, I kind of am stuck in the center. But there are definitely good things about it. If you see it, you'll get something out of it, even if it doesn't all work for you.
It's time for ad number 2 of 10 for RogerandChris.com.
Don't tell people that. Then they're gonna I don't know.
Let it be a surprise. Every ad we do for RogerandChris.com is gonna be unique and beautiful.
Okay.
Like a litter of 10 puppies that you want to keep. All right.
Now you're really making promises.
Okay. Listen, I don't write checks my body can't cash. All right? Tell you that right now.
Fine.
RogerandChris.com.
Yes.
This morning, I thought, we have to think of something to say for RogerandChris.com. Because Chris sends me this, like, just make sure you include these points.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, well, I have to figure out something exciting and jazzy to say around the talking points. I'm taking you inside the inner workings of how you construct a podcast advertisement.
Behind the scenes.
And then, like a bolt from the blue, based on last week's ad, came a letter.
An unsolicited testimonial.
Absolutely, I'm not making this up, but absolutely unsolicited letter from a listener who bought a couch from RogerandChris.com. Jesse. I'm going to read this letter because, Jesse, you're the ad this week.
Yeah.
David Alonzo, I'm delighted to hear you advertising for Roger and Chris. It was largely due to Dave's raves about his reading chair a while back that encouraged me to look at the RNC website about 3 months into the pandemic lockdown. Not merely content to stress purchase a variety of vinyl stickers, despite having no place to put them, I set my stress purchasing sights higher. I had long owned a crummy couch, and more dedicated couch time during the pandemic encouraged me to finally start couch shopping. I figured I'm 40-odd years old. I've never owned a brand new, nice piece of furniture, so carpe diem, etc. Not only do you get to pick out every single element, and not only do they have a variety of styles to select from, you can even request it be a sleeper sofa. And around the time I was expecting to hear my couch was complete, I received an email from the rep stating that the quality assurance review revealed a minor flaw in a cushion, so they were remaking it.
Wow.
This is top of the line, front to back, awesome experience. I love my couch. It is worth every penny. Also, eventually, I made a custom sticker album. That is another story for another time.
Well,
do you have a furniture budget that you're looking to deal with right now? Do you want to spend money? And this is, you're spending money.
But wisely.
Couch costs money. Chair costs money. This is not furniture from Target that you assemble. They build it.
Yeah.
They build it, they bring it to your house. RogerandChris.com. Jesse told you everything you need to know. You go to their site, you select every single thing you want. The fabric, the size, the shape, the couch, the sofa, the ottoman,
what the arms are like, what the legs are like.
The legs, you name it, your ass, like the color of the wood on the legs, like all of it. The end. RogerandChris.com. Go to them. Buy something.
Yes.
The end.
Your domicile will be happy you did.
The other movie that we're talking about this week, as you said, drops tomorrow, October 13th.
Yes.
On Netflix with the wrong title.
Yeah, the English language title is rather on the nose.
What is the Spanish title?
Distancia de rescate.
Yeah, rescue distance.
Yes.
The distance that you have to be... near someone in order for you to rescue them should they try to fall off a cliff or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. However, don't look for it under that Spanish name. English speakers in the United States of America on Netflix, look for it under the name Fever Dream.
Although this isn't, I think when it drops on Netflix internationally. So, you know, in some places you might find it under Distancia de Rescate.
Right, but, you know.
Yeah. We know our global footprint.
Yeah. It is from a filmmaker named Claudia Llosa,
mm-hmm.
Based on a novel from Samantha Schweblin.
Yes. And the two of them co-wrote the screenplay.
Please describe this film.
Wow. Okay. We begin with a woman and a child.
And the child is dragging her through the woods.
Yes. She seems...
A very strong child.
She seems catatonic or
Something is wrong.
Something is wrong. Yeah. And even though neither of their mouths are moving, they are talking to each other.
They're communicating in that... whispery telepathic way. They have a mind connection.
Yes. And their whispery conversation will be the narration of the entire film.
Yeah.
And he is asking that she look back and figure out what happened and when and how and what the details are. And off we go. Mm-hmm. So the lead character is a woman named Amanda, played by Maria Valverde. She is Spanish, and she has a family home out in the countryside in Chile. So she and her young daughter Nina have come out for the summer. Her husband is supposed to be joining them in a couple of weeks. And
but you never see him.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
He pops in every, like...
Phone conversations with seconds. Him about, yeah. like, why he's not there yet.
Right.
Her neighbor is named Carola, played by Dolores Fonzi, who shows up with buckets of water and says, you know, the tap water is really not always something you want to be drinking here. So they form a fast friendship, and then Carola tells her about what happened to her son, David.
Can I interrupt you for just 1 second and
yes.
tell you that tap water, tap water is no good, here's some buckets of water?
Mm-hmm.
That is not merely a tossed off moment.
Yeah, no,
you should be noticing that.
That will be important later. Again, as the kid in the narration points out at the very beginning, it's in the details.
What are you looking? Yeah, what are you noticing in this film? Right.
Anyway, Carola talks about her son David and about how he was nearly poisoned. And in the recovery of that with a woman who is not an MD, but more of a...
Folk healer. Yeah.
That she is convinced that this is not really her son anymore.
In order for the folk healer to help the boy, because the doctor is too far away.
Yeah.
She has to do a...
soul migration.
Yeah. And as you might imagine... when the child emerges, he's spooky now.
Yeah. So this is a movie that is like part, you know, very kind of realistic horror about things like, you know, the environment and, you know, industrial waste. But it's also very realistic about parenting and about mothers feeling like they are losing their children, who feel like they're making mistakes, that they're going to make one mistake that's going to ruin their child's life forever or even kill their child. That's where the title comes from, this sort of constant calculation of how far am I from my daughter if she falls in the pool or if she, you know, whatever, you know. So it is about these very kind of quotidian concerns.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it has this supernatural element of like, did this kid's soul go into somebody else's body? And, you know, how are these people talking to each other in the narration if they aren't speaking? And it operates on both levels, and it is very creepy on both levels.
It really is.
This is a movie that very slowly fills you with this sense of dread until you realize that it is an entire tennis ball in your stomach.
There is constant slippage between the natural and the supernatural. Between the explainable and the unexplainable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in the service of sort of a Todd Haynes Dark Water kind of thing, and a Todd Haynes Safe sort of thing, where
you're not quite sure what to believe.
What to believe anymore. Not that this filmmaking style is like Todd Haynes, but that, you know, the point where external stuff and internal stuff meet in ways you don't understand, and you have to allow for the possibility that these people in the film are experiencing supernatural stuff, that soul migrations are actual medical practice, and that it could happen to you someday.
Or you have to question whether or not you can rely on this narrator, you know.
That too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this quite a bit because it is so quiet and creepy, and
there's not a single cat jumping out of a single closet.
There is no, it's that kind of, you know, slow horror where if you're not really into it, if you're not really watching, you finish the film going, I'm sorry, what happened there? Who was doing what to who?
Yeah.
Answer, you might not know. Mm-hmm. And inasmuch as ambiguity is, as we talked about last week with Titan, and we've said it so many times before, ambiguity in art house cinema is sometimes a wall they get to lean on when they don't know where to go. Here, it works effectively.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't explain to you how the supernatural stuff of this film was meant to be working, only that it may not be working. It may be a situation where people's internal strife and anxiety over the stress that they are living in and the environmental stress that they're under could have just played with everybody's minds.
True. But it does bring you to an ending that registers as, like, depending on how you've been taking this up until now, it's like either horrifying and devastating, or like at least kind of putting a bow on it, you know, in a way that works.
So, you know, Netflix invariably is going to bury this film. So you're going to have to hunt for it.
Yeah. Unless you live in a Spanish speaking country, it's not going to pop up on your main page.
It's like Atlantics from early in the 2020. You know, we were all, you know, excited about it because it's such a great film. And it also deals with supernatural stuff in ways that you aren't expecting.
Yeah.
But again, it wound up on Netflix and then it sort of like disappeared like a ghost. But it's still there.
Yeah.
You can still watch Atlantics on Netflix, and you should. High recommendation from both of us on that.
Atlantics and Fever Dream, both worth a look.
Yeah. Y'all know how to deal with Netflix. They don't. Unless you're watching Squid Game, they don't care about you.
Yeah, I mean, when Annette premiered on Amazon Prime, and we did it for Max Film, like both Iffy and Dre were like, "Oh yeah, it wasn't on like the main page. I had to type in Annette to find it." And usually, like when you know it's coming to America, like there's nothing else on the main page of Amazon. You know, when you open the app on your Apple TV, but movies like this, you know, like Mad Women's Ball right now, you know, you've really got to hunt for it because they're not gonna put it in front of your eyeballs.
True. We got some letters.
Yes.
I don't have a streaming pick. Atlantics. How about that? Just thought about that. Should have thought about that before we turned on the mic, shouldn't I?
I suppose so.
Atlantics.
Fine. I'll say Roma.
Oh, you know what y'all should watch? Actually, it's on the TCM app. You should go watch Susan and God.
Oh, my.
That movie is weird. A George Cukor film from 1940.
Mass, very much a film to play.
With Joan Crawford, who plays this, you know, sort of breezy
socialite,
flighty socialite who goes off on a European tour and comes back the devotee of a religious cult. Spends the rest of the movie trying to convert all these, like, martini-sipping, like, country house people who are all like, oh, darling, no. It starts out kind of as a comedy, and then it becomes super dramatic as, like, God finally, you know, well, becomes important to people.
And basically, it's a thing where, like, you know, her whole deal is like, oh, you have to be completely honest and confess your blah, blah, blah. And, of course, she's the last person on earth to actually get her own house in order. And so the whole movie is about shaming Susan before she figures out that she has no right butting into anybody else's life with her newfound spirituality.
It's a fascinating movie. We were sitting on the couch late Saturday afternoon looking at the TCM app going, what is, and I said, what is Susan and God? And you said, I've heard about it. I haven't watched it. And I said, well, George Cukor and Joan Crawford can't, how wrong can you go?
It is probably the funniest, like at least in the first act, the funniest I've ever seen Joan Crawford be in a movie.
Yeah.
Like she is a comic actress in this, which I don't know how many opportunities she had to do that.
But then the gears all shift.
Whew,
yeah. It's weird.
It is.
But I'm glad we watched it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's our streaming pick. Okay. I like that.
Letters.
Yes.
This is from Jess. It's barely a letter. It's a sentence. Listen, hoes. Thank you.
Woo. Present.
Listen, hoes, you do have a very loyal fandom. Embrace it.
Oh, don't think we don't.
Yes, but do we have a fan community of people who take sides?
Oh,
and
brother.
Argue about us.
Yes, and where's our toxic fan base?
Where's our toxic fan base? Do we have people who fight with each other about, like, you know, who their favorite is? Like, do we have people who parse episodes and be like, another medium disappointment of an episode?
Worst episode ever. Speaking of which, I know you don't read reviews usually of movies you haven't seen yet, but
I don't.
Did you see the Guardian's piece on Ghostbusters Afterlife?
No, I didn't know there was a Ghostbusters Afterlife until like yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I read it because, you know, a lot of people had been citing it, and it's an interesting review, not just in the notion of what did I say about the movie, but what it has to say about a certain kind of fan and the way that certain films and TV shows sort of, you know, accommodate them.
Right.
And it makes it sound like this entire movie is nothing but like, ooh, I recognize that. Ooh, I recognize that.
Oh, cool.
Ooh, I recognize that. So, yeah. Anyway.
All right.
That's all I got. Go.
Shoddy. I love this. Here's the subject line of the letter. I am not watching James Bond.
Oh, all right.
Well, guess what, Shoddy? Neither are we. I mean,
until we can.
Yet. Dear David and Alonzo, just found out that the new James Bond movie only opened to only 60% of the box office of Venom and catered mostly to people over the age of 50. Good. Because in our, and she puts his words in quotes, woke new world, I'm appalled by the veneration that Bond movies still receive, including from female film critics. Dr. No opened only 1 year after Breathless in 1962, and Sean Connery was a great Jean-Paul Belmondo clone as the epitome of cool. Going in.
Shots fired.
But Bond movies are only as good as their villains, and aside from great performances from Eva Green and Javier Bardem, Craig has been playing the same tune of, well, though she may be crusty and bitter, only England can save our world. By unplugging the internet. Meanwhile, he's still gallivanting around with women half his age and having one-night stands with Monica Bellucci after having killed her husband. Four movies in, they still haven't done anything with Naomi Harris or Jeffrey Wright, two great black actors, not to mention they replaced Judi Dench with a white man. I hear this final Bond movie has a strong black female character in it, but after 26 movies, that's the definition of tokenism, isn't it? And as Craig retires, everyone is speculating what new ideas the producers of Bond will bring about. The truth is, John David Washington has already done the Black Bond. And between Fast and Furious, John Wick, Mission Impossible, and the Marvel movies, James Bond is just a dormant brand now for old white people and the wealth porn aficionados. I'm glad it's only doing so-so in our country. Thank you for your time. Shoddy, have we told you lately that we love you?
Don't ever change.
The best.
You know what? I like John David Washington is doing Bond. I wish I liked Tenet more, but he is definitely like giving 007 realness. Mm.
Jack, who sent the letter of all the horror movies he's watching.
Yes.
Couple updates real quick. He says it was Casper from 1995.
Okay.
It's a childhood film I hadn't seen since I was 8. It does not hold up.
So few things do.
Should have put Paranorman on the list instead.
Mm.
Something I forgot to include is that other than Rocky Horror, Scream, Jennifer's Body, and a few of the animated films, my partner has never seen any of the movies on this list and heard of very few of them. Every movie they are going into blind, I'm not even telling them titles before the movie starts.
Oof.
Number 3, you are both Mr. Linoleum and Mr. Knife in my book. Number 4, here's the remainder of the list. Let's talk more about this list.
I was saying, you were going to go week by week, right?
Yeah, but I forgot what we finished with last time.
I never remember a word you say.
Funny Games.
Which one?
97.
Okay.
97 Funny Games. Which is...
I mean, they're both.
Quite upsetting. And it's the movie where I you and I agreed on this when we saw it. We were like, does Michael Haneke... hate us for liking movies?
Yeah. It's a movie that, like, I will acknowledge...
Is he telling me while I'm watching this movie that I shouldn't be watching this movie?
I will acknowledge it is effective at doing what the filmmaker is setting out to do, but what is he setting out to do exactly besides punish me for wanting to see this movie?
Make me hate myself more! Michael Haneke.
Yay.
Haneke. Listen.
Haneke.
When I want to watch a Michael Haneke movie, I watch The White Ribbon.
There you go.
Piano Teacher.
Yeah, I like those.
Amour, if I'm thinking about, you know, the death of my future ancient old husband and how I will smother you with a pillow, I guess, if I have to.
Please, would you? What was that one that he made that felt like the greatest hits compilation?
I don't remember.
It was something like Fast Forward or Flashback or something.
I don't know. VIY? How do I not know this film?
Never heard of it. New one for us.
Yeah.
1967 Russian film. It's on Tubi.
Let's watch it.
All right.
Santa Sangre.
Mm-hmm.
Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Mm-hmm.
Train to Busan.
Oh, yeah.
Devil's Backbone.
Mm-hmm.
The Orphanage.
Yes.
The 77 Suspiria.
Thank you.
Except
No Substitutes.
What? Except No Substitutes. You know, I like the...
I know.
La Casa Muda from 2010. Let the Right One In from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
The 2006 Wicker Man remake.
Not the bees! Not the bees.
Martyrs. Oof. That's a tough one. 2008. Audition. That's another tough one.
That, by the way, over at Breakfast All Day, once a month we do a thing called Off the Menu where we'll pick a theme and we'll put up like 5 or 6 choices and Patreon subscribers get to pick which one we're doing. And so we're doing a horror movie this month, and we're having a runoff now because Audition and Raw tied.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
2002's Dark Water. 2002's The Ring remake.
Mm-hmm.
And Rec from 2007.
Oh, yeah.
Look, solid spooky choices.
Sure.
We're down. We're into it.
I mean, this is so not my genre, but, you know.
Yeah, I know. I live with you. I know.
I'm sensitive.
So during the recording of this podcast.
Yes. Is there breaking news?
Yeah. Norma sent me a recipe for gochujang roasted eggplant with fried scallions.
That is.
Do you know what this means?
That is breaking news.
Do you know what this? No, it is. In this. Listen. In this timeline, in this Christian home.
What does it mean, Dave White?
It means here's an entree for dinner that can be eaten by both you and diabetes me.
All right.
Happily.
Great.
And all I have to do is leave out the brown sugar. It's from the New York Times recipe.
Are you sure you can leave out the brown sugar?
Extremely excited.
Ruin this dish?
You can always leave out the brown sugar.
Mm. Should I just sprinkle some on top of mine?
Will you calm down? Oh, no. 2 teaspoons of brown sugar are going to be left out of my sauce, glazing sauce.
You shouldn't have told me that there was even brown sugar's going
to
get anywhere near this thing.
I would like
now
to
it's all
you,
I can think about.
I'd like to remind you of the day that think back about 20 years ago.
Is this the spelt pasta story?
This is the spelt pasta story where I didn't tell you that it was spelt pasta and you took a bite and you said, "What is this?" I said, "It's spelt pasta." And I said, and you said, "You lied to me."
You did.
You were so angry. So believe me, I learned my lesson that day. You don't have to put my hand on the stove twice. So.
Fine. I'm sure it'll be fine without the brown sugar.
I'm stoked. I'm super happy about this. Anybody else have any great vegetarian recipes that don't involve carbs for me so that I can feed him too as the cook of this home?
Yes.
That's all. This is very exciting. It's very exciting breaking news. It is breaking news.
Sure.
We'll talk about it in detail on the Linoleum Knife and Fork. And you can go there to Linoleum Knife and Fork if you are subscribed to the Patreon that we have. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Variety of levels of subscription. And at each level, you get different content. And as you go up the levels, you get all the content at the levels that are under that level, monetarily wise. You get more and more and more and more. Do you need to hear us talk in your face like 4 to 5 times a week? Great. This is how you can do it. We have content for sale.
Yes.
Call it love for sale if you like. You can go buy it. Linoleum Knife. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Thank you for listening, everybody. What podcast should we highlight this week? I'll say, okay, the Big Fat Gay Podcast, Dan and Trevor, Don and Michael.
I like that podcast.
Yes, they talk about a lot of issues.
About people who are big, fat, and gay.
Yes.
Guess what that means?
People like us.
That's us.
Aesthetics and otherwise. Yeah, always really interesting conversations. They're very funny. It's two couples doing a podcast. So if you like this show with one couple doing a podcast.
One fat couple.
Imagine how much you'll like two couples doing a podcast. They are, you know, on Apple Podcasts and all the places where you get them. You can, of course, subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts for free. If you're there, leave us a 5-star review and we'll read it on the show. You can also leave us 5 stars in the many places where we stream, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean, all them places. Follow us on social media at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Pick up his new album, Six Tape, at blue.bandcamp.com. And yeah, that's where we are with all this, I suppose. We'll be back next time with more. Until then.
Goodbye.